It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Bolfazer.
Welcome to episode 22, our second season of The Scoop, 222.
Two to the third. Like the little carrot, up carrot.
Oh, there we go, yeah. Will, as you said before we started, Will Cummings, Deontay Christmas, 222.
What was Aaron Brown?
Oh, he also might have been number 22.
Aaron Brown was 22 because I remember Aaron Brown comes in. Deontay Christmas tweeted, man, they should have retired my number and not let this kid wear it.
I remember that. So an homage, so to speak, to those players. Thanks for being with us this week. Lots more spring football to get into, some more recruiting news. We've got plenty of mailbag questions. So we'll get right to, I guess, an ongoing story, a continuing story, which is Temple's pursuit of Trey Klock, who's a graduate transfer, has been playing at Georgia Tech. He will actually have two seasons of eligibility because he's graduating early. Played at Lower Dauphin, right?
Correct.
Lower Dauphin High School was a tight end when Temple recruited him. Now they're involved with trying to get him in as a grad transfer, could either play guard or tackle. Matt just talked to him, what, last night?
Yep.
Last night, and that story's up on the site right now. Matt, tell us what he said, what your thoughts are on kind of trying to read the situation.
Well, I mean, I get a good vibe from him. I think right now, if I had to guess, I think he ends up coming to Temple. He took an official visit to Northwestern. He's also taken two visits to Temple. The first visit was an official visit, and then he came back because his mom was sick for the weekend when he took that official visit. So his mom was sick, and he came back like 2 weeks later. His mom and dad both got to see the campus. His dad actually used to be the coach at Lower Dauphin High School, and he was telling me that his dad actually has a really good relationship with Ed Foley. They know each other from like coaching clinics and stuff like that around the state. So they have a good relationship, and Trey has kind of built that relationship with Ed. And Trey was also talking about his relationship with the offensive line coach, Chris Weisahan. Chris went down to go see him. I believe it was in December. He went down to Atlanta to go see Trey, just to go check in on him and try to lock down the official visit. And he also raved about Jeff Collins and his conversations with Jeff Collins. Trey said that he, since Trey plays, is still at Georgia Tech and taking classes there and looking to finish out his degree and hopefully he'll graduate in July and then be able to have 2 years of eligibility and be able to play right away wherever he transfers to. But Trey actually went to the SEC championship game in December and got to see Jeff Collins' Florida defense go up against Alabama.
Didn't do too well in that.
Yeah, he didn't. You know, obviously Florida lost that game, and Trey said he brought it up with Jeff, and Jeff kind of just wasn't too happy about it, and he kept bringing it up. And at the end, it kind of just was a funny joke for them. But he really raved about Jeff Collins and the conversations that they had. I think Trey feels really comfortable with Collins. I got a good feeling on Klock. But the thing with him is, he keeps saying he's looking to make a decision by the end of this month, probably within the next couple weeks. He'll make a decision. He said he has some Big Ten schools, some schools from the American on him. So he didn't name specific schools and who else is left in the mix. But, you know, he's, I think, weighing the option of maybe taking another official visit before he makes a decision. But right now he's just down at Georgia Tech and still taking classes and looking to finish out his degree in business administration. And then hopefully he'll look to get an MBA wherever he goes.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the thing maybe last week or week before, but my kind of gut would tell me that if you have a decision and date in mind and you're pretty much down these two schools and he told you that, look, proximity to home is going to be a major factor, I would agree. I think Temple's in pretty good shape with this.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about his father. Maybe we should talk about his grandfather.
You'll be looking
for the switch. How do I silence this?
I could see your eyes lighting up. At first, I thought you. At first, I didn't know what direction you were going. He's like, talk about his grandfather, and then your eyes like lit up. Like, this is funny, right? Come on, Matt.
Or it's more of just a visual cue for you to think, because you were just in La La Land, which is going to win like 7 to 8 Oscars.
Yeah, great, great film, I would imagine. I haven't seen it yet.
It's a musical.
Walk by a theater where it's playing in like Bryn Mawr. I was like, oh, we should go see that.
It's playing at the Highway Theater in Jenkintown, the historic Highway Theater.
Yeah.
I've never
historic.
It is. It's like an old school theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the one in Bryn Mawr.
I watched Hacksaw Ridge and Arrival this weekend.
I thought you were going to mention Hacksaw Jim Duggan instead.
No, Hacksaw Ridge, Andrew Garfield. It was okay. Yeah. Vince Vaughn's in it. He plays a sergeant, and he just plays like Vince Vaughn playing a sergeant. So he's making like your mom jokes and stuff, like while wearing like a uniform. It was interesting. Kind of took you out of the scene a little bit.
When Dwight Yoakam was on the Grammys the other night, he comes out, I immediately think of Wedding Crashers and Vince Vaughn in that scene. Dwight Yoakam is, so at the beginning of Wedding Crashers, Vaughn and Owen Wilson are trying to facilitate those divorce proceedings, and right. Dwight Yoakam is the one who is, he's the husband there.
Go comatose for me.
Yeah. And he's also in Four Christmases.
Yeah.
He's father, Pastor Bill.
You love Four Christmases.
I think it's a great
movie. You and my brother.
Movie. Oh, yeah. We hit it off. We hit it off for your bachelor party. Just trading Four Christmases lines at a bar in Atlantic City at the Trop. It's just standard stuff. So anyway, as Matt said, he talked to Trey Clock. That story is up on our website. And we want to play just a quick clip of that interview, which, again, you can also listen to on AlScoop.com. And so here's Trey Clock just talking about his thoughts on Temple, why he's, you know, why he's interested and in, you know, pursuing them as a potential destination.
I mean, it was great. When I first got my release and I started talking to schools, Temple was one of the first ones that reached out to me. And I was... Coach Weiss came down to Atlanta to see me, and we talked for the day, and we planned an official visit. So I was up there with seven or eight other guys, one of their big official visit weekends. And I've seen campus one time in high school. I think I was a junior then, but saw like the facilities a little bit, but it was a short visit. One of my former teammates, Adam Metz, played there as an offensive lineman, so okay. I just went for the day. But just so I got a much better understanding of what the program's all about, got to meet the new coaching staff, got to meet Coach Collins and everybody, and had a really, really good visit. And then I came up again. My mom was sick that night, so she wasn't able to come. It was just my dad. But I wanted her to see the place and get another trip there, so I went up on my own another weekend.
Right, so let's talk about this just for another quick second before we move on to another aspect of the football program. I mean, how big of an impact would this be for the program if you get a guy like him post signing day in terms of your needs on the offensive line? How big would this be for him?
Yeah, I think it'd be a pretty good guy. I mean, I think speaking to people, we've kind of been told that hey, if this was an 18-year-old kid that Rob was assigned a rating to, he arguably be their best recruit in this class, kind of up there with Mike Jones. And I think it adds depth to a position, absolutely depth, and it adds veteran leadership. I mean, outside of Leon Johnson, say Trey Clock comes in, say that you're comfortable with him playing at left tackle. I mean, obviously you have big shoes to fill playing left tackle, filling Deion Dawkins' spot, but that allows you to keep Leon Johnson in that position that he's started 18 games at over the last 2 years. So it adds some continuity on a line that if you don't get Trey Clock, all of a sudden you're bringing in a new center. Mm-hmm. You're bringing in a new tackle, whether it's a left tackle or Leon Johnson coming in. You're still dealing with some questionable guards. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it'd be huge. I think it would provide a lot, and especially considering, imagine they start off week one against, albeit a pretty mediocre Notre Dame team in South Bend. It'd be interesting to having a brand new offensive line.
After losing Deion Dawkins, who's going to be drafted in April's NFL draft, it was Brendan McGowan, who, you know, was a fine center, but I think Matt Hennessy will be able to fill in for him and step in there. But I mean, you do need, and I think you really need another guard to come into this program or another tackle to come into this program and help them next year. You know, if they don't get Clock, I think you don't have a lot of depth on that offensive line. I mean, at guard, you have some unproven guys or some guys that maybe showed some flashes last year, like mm-hmm. Javon Fair, who I think has a chance to be a good player. But you also have Brian Carter, Adrian Sullivan. So some guys that showed flashes last year but were inconsistent and weren't able to play a full game, really. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a huge get whether you put him at – maybe you have him, you know, at right tackle and you move Leon to left. But the way he was talking and the way he played at Georgia Tech, they have – he said he's going to have to switch stances now at mm-hmm. Temple with sure, Dave Patton's offense.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure – it sounds like maybe he'd be more likely to end up at guard, but especially because he's going to come in and not be able to come in until probably late July mm-hmm. Because he's going to be taking classes down at Georgia Tech until then. So with the fact that he's not going to have much time to work with, he's going to miss spring ball, he's not going to have much time to work with the coaching staff. I mean, I think he's more likely to end up at guard, but whether he plays guard or tackle, it would be a huge get.
So speaking of recruiting and additions, you know, we talked a lot on signing day about the fact that, you know, Jeff Collins and a mostly new staff, they come in December. I guess, like, they're responsible for the last four players If you don't include Todd Jones, and you know, again, the question was going to be, okay, what can Jeff Collins and his staff do with a full recruiting cycle under their belt? So if this upcoming Junior Day is any indication, now Temple's going to be hosting a Junior Day this coming Monday. More than what, 120 players?
Yeah, I'd say 150, 200.
A lot of players from New Jersey. So again, if the caliber of player coming in, again, these are guys that have not committed yet. But if the caliber of player is any indication, then you know, it seems that Jeff Collins can generate a lot of interest, and it'll certainly be interesting to see what they can do with a full cycle under their belt, getting to know more people in the area. So let's talk about that for a second. So just some of the names of players that are coming in. Ashim Young, who's a four-star recruit, has offers from pretty much just about everyone. I mean, let's talk about some of these guys coming in and what that means. They don't typically do junior days this early. They're typically, I mean, one of this stature, right? They're normally.
You mean Temple, or you mean programs in general?
Yeah, Temple. I feel like Temple hasn't had one.
It's pretty standard for programs, like Pitt's having their Sunday. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't remember one this big in the past couple of years for Temple.
That's more of the statement, is you don't usually hear about them bringing in 200 people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Iverson Clement's going to be there. Kyle Dobbins, the defensive back, the running back from St. Augustine's going to be there. So they're getting
St. Augustine, yeah.
Augustine. They got some talented guys coming in. I mean, not to say that they're going to get a lot of these guys, but there's nothing. You get them on campus. You get to talk to them, which is huge during this period because Jeff Collins can't go out to these high schools right now. They can come to him. So I think it's good that Kyle Pitts will be there. Kyle Pitts is going to be another guy that's going to end up having offers from a lot of places. He has Tennessee. Is he in Penn State, Kyle?
I believe he does have Penn State. Penn State. Rutgers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, as I understand it, I think they're supposed to. This is going to be a combined thing where they take some of these players down to the link, show them around, you know, where they'll be playing, and then have them up on campus for the rest of the day. But interesting because, again, it kind of shows you that, again, have they gotten any of these guys yet? No, but they definitely made an impact in terms of getting some names out there in terms of, like, getting kids to campus right away, which I think in terms of generating some buzz answers a little bit of a question there because I think the fan base, and rightfully so, that, oh, the guy's coming in from Florida. Can he generate any buzz? Can he get any of these guys? Can he flip some Florida kids? They didn't flip anybody who was committed to Florida, Florida State, or Miami, but if this is what it looks like to get a good start on the 2018 class in terms of getting guys on campus, not a bad way to start.
Yeah, I mean, historically, what happens with Rule, happens with coaches all across the country, is that second class is always a significantly better on paper class than the first time. For a lot of it, just logistically, I mean, instead of trying to fit an entire class into 6 weeks, you have an entire cycle. You have these junior days. You have getting them to camps. You have all that. So I think it's reasonable for fans to say, okay, we're going to have a top 25 recruiting class, and we're going to get 6 4 stars. But I would imagine for people that like stars that this class will end up being a little bit better than the last one.
Yeah, and in comparison to last year, I mean, I think the first junior day that they had was the Temple Nova basketball game.
Yeah.
Right. Where they hosted, I want to say, about 50 recruits.
They offered CJ Onichi or whatever on the concourse that day. Yeah. They were his first offer, and then he chose Rutgers.
Yeah, but I mean, if you compare it to last year, I mean, to have 150, 200 kids this year, I mean, that's some buzz for, you know, a new coach that comes in and has to, you know, make some relationships or rekindle some relationships up in the Northeast. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's huge to get a guy like Ashim Young up here who has offers from everywhere. I mean, he Clemson offered him recently. He has an offer from Alabama. I mean, he could go probably, when it's all said and done, he'll be able to go to any school in the country. To have him on campus is big. And, you know, as bad as, you know, some of these Imhotep kids have maybe worked out, he's a big-time prospect, and you want to get your foot in the door there with this new coaching staff. So, yeah, I think it's a big opportunity for Temple. It's certainly a good sign for the fans that you can just get these kids on campus and start to build these relationships.
I imagine you awkwardly being present on the concourse when someone's getting an offer and you're just like putting mustard onto like a half-baked heat lamp hot dog and you're like, I'll see myself out the door.
I'm just going to say this. Raise your hand if you've bought food from the concourse Leah Cora Center like 3 times this year.
Me?
You?
Yeah.
It's always you. Yeah, Matt and I are men of the people. We say, okay, we'll eat the free food given to us. We're gracious of this.
Not a man of the people. I take that food, and you make it sound like I buy the food, and then I go sit in isolation somewhere in the 200 level to be alone with my thoughts. No, I take the food.
Wasn't that an old Chaney move? Chaney would sit up in the 200 level while they were warming up?
Sometimes, yeah. He would talk about, like, and then he would talk about, like, how he liked being alone and wanted to just go get a bag of peanuts and sit under a tree.
Really?
Yeah, not like right before a game, but he would say when he would retire, he'd be like, I'm just going to go, you know, eat peanuts.
He'd walk around like the administration office with peanuts and just like leave the shells on the floor, right?
Yeah, he'd do stuff like that.
Instead,
like
he retired, the ground round. Buys crabs, right? Isn't that the story?
Crabs, plays golf. So he's living the...
He's golfing anymore.
What?
I don't know if he's necessarily golfing.
I don't know, yeah. I mean, up at Walnut Lane. Who knows what he's up to?
He probably does.
Yeah. John Chaney knows what he's up to.
Mike Kern probably does, too.
Yeah. All right, so one of the things we're going to be doing leading up to spring football is kind of taking a look at one position each week, building up to the spring. So Kyle has decided to start us off on the linebacking position.
I did what now?
Part of the football field.
Yeah.
Where Dick Butkus and Jack Lambert and Jack Hamm and Mike Singletary and those types of greats.
But if you just said that and you just mentioned, like, mediocre Eagles players from earlier 2000, like Carlos Evans,
Mark Simonow, Mike Reichenbach, James Willis, who for like a month was on the coaching staff at Temple.
Really?
On Al Golden's first coaching staff. Yeah, and they left to take another job.
Is it still early 2000s Eagles?
James Darling.
You're in more
Washington 90s State
now at this point, aren't you?
I don't know. I'm all over the place. I don't know.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
New
linebackers.
Andrew Thacker's going to have a pretty inexperienced unit, right? I mean, you're replacing like 2.5 starters. Because you're replacing Avery Williams, you're replacing Stephon Marshall, you're replacing Jared Alwine. You get Jared Folks, who played a handful of games.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see what Sean Bradley, who a lot of people were talking a lot about going into last year, does. I'll be interested to see what Chappelle Russell does. Mm-hmm. I'll be interested to see does Deshaun Grimes finally get on the field more extendedly. Mm-hmm. Or is it somebody like Casey Williams? We talk about Todd Santeo with the quarterbacks always going to have a little bit of advantage over the freshman because he's coming in the spring. Casey Williams is doing that too. Yeah, I mean, how do we kind of want to look at this? Do we want to get predictions?
So Folks have played in the middle, right?
Yeah, he played middle.
So he's more your
clubhouse. You would assume that he's going to start at Mike Linebacker.
Clubhouse leader as the Mike linebacker. And then outside you've got guys like William
We're assuming
Klein,
Tabor Johnson runs a 4-3,
We
right?
are, yeah. I mean, who knows? That's an even better question. Is he running a 3-4 or 4-3? If it's a 3-4, then maybe Quenko's like an outside... Well, I think he's an outside linebacker either way. Who knows? I mean, we could ask that question. We could get the multiple answer, which always is like...
Well, we're going to throw a lot of different looks at him.
A lot of different looks, you know.
Yeah. Well, the answer we've gotten so far is just that they're going to try and fit the players best they can and
fit
what they have, so...
If you ever said it to Phil Snow, you run a 4-3, right? Guys, I try to remember that at one point in my
0-11.
Career, I actually won a national championship with 7 players. And 6 of them were linebackers. I love Phil Snow. I miss him. Anyway, so you'd have Quenku on the outside. Sean Bradley, again, in last year's spring game, Sean Bradley and Chappelle Russell both came up with a couple big hits apiece.
Chappelle Russell killed Trayvon Williams.
Yeah.
Chappelle Russell had one of those hits where you're just sitting there like, wow.
And there's been a lot. I mean, Chappelle Russell had some decent offers coming out of Lakewood, right? Didn't he have, like, Boston College?
Yeah,
had,
Rutgers, too.
Rutgers. So,
I think he even had Michigan State.
Yeah, I think he might have had Michigan State. So this will be an interesting year because we've talked a lot about how Temple got some pretty consistent play from their linebackers, but they're always kind of undersized. You know, Phil Snow said a bunch of times, you know, I wouldn't have recruited Avery Williams, I probably wouldn't have recruited Stephon Marshall because they weren't really big guys. Now they're recruiting to a longer, leaner body type where, you know, again, like a guy like Russell, a guy like Sean Bradley, Bradley was what, a safety and a running back coming out of Rancocas Valley, a gray shirt guy who really, I remember Mike Saravo saying, like, yeah, we all kind of missed on him. They were pretty high on him, you know. So now it's a year where I would say those three guys, Russell, Bradley, and, you know, you initially heard some promising stuff about Deshaun Grimes. I haven't heard too much about him recently. It doesn't mean that he can't respond well to the new coaching staff.
I put Quenku in that first group. I think he's probably in there. He played a decent amount as a true freshman. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's somebody that's kind of shifted down. I mean, they took two guys from the secondary last year and put them at linebacker.
Yeah, Jeremiah Atoki, I would say, is definitely probably going to be in the mix.
Linebacker now.
Yeah.
Even after playing wide receiver for a little bit last year.
Yeah. And Atoki played a little bit in the bowl game, right?
Yep.
I mean, yeah, if we're offering predictions, I'd say maybe Folks in the middle, Quenku, and maybe Atoki on the outside.
I'm doing Quenku, Folks, Russell.
I'll agree with Kyle. I think Russell's a starter.
Very, very talented.
Yeah, he's very, very talented. And he's one of those guys where like Sean Bradley, he played running back, played a bunch of different positions in high school. And I know, you know, Rule talked about it. Multiple coaches on the staff kind of said, you know, when things click for him and when he gets used to playing football without the ball in his hands, he's going to be really, really special. He's kind of a freak athlete, really fast. So I think you can kind of almost pencil him in as one of the starters. I think he's he's going to be a good player. And I think Folks is probably the obvious choice just because
he has the experience.
Yeah, he has the experience at Mike linebacker. I don't know. I mean, Sean Bradley could probably play Mike linebacker. Sure. I mean, I think that's maybe where I'll play.
He actually, I mean, that's why he played a little bit in the spring last year. Yeah. Mary Chappelle Russell being like, this is the first time I've ever gotten to a guy and the mic's right next to me. Like, Sean Bradley runs a 4.5. Like,
yeah. So, like we'll be saying with every position, it's also going to be interesting to see how these guys respond to a new coaching staff in the spring. Is there a little
and,
bit?
Sorry to cut you off, this is something that, Matt, you've heard, they're probably still looking to add to this position group, right? I mean, Andrew Thacker was kind of kicking the tires in a little bit of JUCO kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from what I've heard, yeah, I think they're looking to add some type of piece at linebacker. I don't know, you know, it sounds like maybe that they're looking at the JUCO route because even though the names we listed above, they lose a lot at linebacker and they have a lot of inexperienced guys there. So if they could bring in a JUCO guy to come in and compete with the scholarships they have left, and it seems like they have some wiggle room to add or, you know, a couple pieces down the stretch here after signing day. So, you know, linebacker, if they're going to add another piece besides Straight Clock and besides maybe Chris Jimenez, I'd say, you know, a JUCO linebacker would be something to watch for.
Michael Kendricks might be available soon.
Yeah.
Connor Barwin might be available soon.
He's play linebacker.
I mean, you could drop him back, right?
If you're running a 3-4.
It's probably, on a vegetarian diet.
Vegetarian's too casual.
Plant-based diet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can drop him back
a little bit. If Michael Kendricks all of a sudden got eligibility to play for Temple, I'd be upset and want his brother anyway.
We are going to, on that note, as Dalton would say, our sometimes serious, sometimes funny mailbag. Again, Dalton's with us producing the podcast, and we thank him for that. So a lot of questions to get to this week, some from the message board, some from Twitter. First one that was DM'd to us by the I Believe guy, Jack Fatica, a longtime Temple basketball fan, sends us this question: with the news that Mark Godfrey is out at North Carolina State, which was news to me until... That just happened today.
I don't think it's an official that he's out. I think he's going to be. I think the word is that he's going to be
likely
let go.
Yeah,
I think he's
going to
be let go after the season.
Yeah, the Sporting News is reporting that apparently that they are reaching out to candidates to replace him as coach.
All right. So, question here is: do you think Fran Dunphy? Do you think FD will be considered for the opening?
I think you know that answer.
Yeah, and I think the answer is no. I think Jack's just kind of maybe looking to bait us a little bit here. Yeah. And
every time the Rutgers job comes open, people seem to ask that too. Do you think Fran Duffy will be?
And their job will probably come open in 3 months. That he'll be, not 3 months, kind of, it might be a month. I keep forgetting how far into the season we are. That might be his name thrown around a little further up North Broad.
You think so?
Yeah, maybe. I don't think he'd be interested at this point in his career.
No, why would you? No.
Why would you take that step to go play in a high school gym? But LaSalle comes open.
Doesn't Matt Brady's name come up as maybe the likely replacement there? The shot doctor who was a good teacher of shooting when he was at St. Joe's.
You think Dr. G won't be back?
I don't think so. I think Dr. G's Sweet 16 luster.
What is his? I have no idea what his contract status is up there.
I don't know either.
Because LaSalle's not exactly a school that's rife with money right now. They lowered tuition, did they not, LaSalle?
Probably.
I believe so, but that's because tuition is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. If we have any LaSalle alum listening, I apologize. It's going to come across almost homerish. I don't see the appeal of LaSalle. Why would you pay that much money to go to...
Get Andrew Albert on board here.
I'd ask him the same question.
Andrew, if you're listening,
all it says
buddy.
Is he signed an extension after the Sweet 16, but it just says multi-year. What does that mean?
Yeah,
that Sweet 16 was 5 years ago, 4 years ago, which seems nuts. I remember
the strength of the South Philly floater from Tyrone Garland.
Southwest
Philly floater. Yeah, sorry. So no, I think that's just kind of a playful jab at like, oh, Fran's in his late 60s. Would anybody else want him? So no, I do not think he's going to be considered for the NC State opening. But we appreciate the question. Next one, Stephen Caspin, at Stephen Caspin on Twitter, asks us, has any recruit who called TU the University of Temple ever committed to the program?
I looked into this. Yes.
Yes. Let me see if I can guess. This is just based strictly off of a random memory that may be right or wrong. Ventel Bryant. Wasn't Ventel Bryant a University of Temple guy?
Maybe. I think he put that in his profile. I think he was at Temple and it said like University of Temple.
Yes, what we're referring to is a lot of times recruits will say blessed to receive an offer from the University of Temple. My 11th offer.
The is all in caps.
The.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who did that yesterday? That was they offered, you know, like 30 people yesterday. One of them said, "Yeah, Justin Johnson, Imhotep got offered while we were doing this." The offensive guard up at Imhotep. But yeah, I looked into it. he's in the competition to be under center against Notre Dame.
Benson Israel.
Under center.
Oh, under center. under center. Oh, Senteo.
Senteo did it, right? Frank Neutile.
Frank Neutile
committed to the University of Temple, and then a year later, one of his friends committed to Virginia Tech and misspelled Virginia, and I guess his friends were giving him crap about it. And Frank Neutile responded, "This is nowhere near as embarrassing as the time that I committed to the University of Temple."
Oh, that's great. Like, self-awareness on his part. I'm proud of Frank. That's good. Frank Neutile probably.
Frank Neutile did it. A Florida kid that technically committed that will never make it here did it. Montavious Bernie committed. He tweeted, like, "God's got me on this one, committing to the University of Temple."
Next question comes from Off the Hook. Off the Hook 3 on Twitter. If UConn basketball is moving, so what he's referring to there is that there was some report out there saying that UConn's trying to talk to
their
Big
AD
East.
Just told McMurphy there's absolutely no truth to that report. Okay. But that being said, I'm under the impression they're not going anywhere, but that being said, what would he say? Yeah, we're actively.
Yeah. So if UConn basketball is moving, does Mike Oresko pressure Pat Kraft to make a move on Dumphy? In an attempt to elevate the program out of obscurity, there's an extra M in there, obscurity. Can't imagine Collins staying 10-plus years with the same mediocre results as Dumphy. Kraft sitting around for some reason. Well, a lot to digest there. No.
No, I mean, this is you're talking about the commissioner of the league potentially pushing out the coach that has been the conference's coach of the year the past 2 years.
Yeah, no.
No chance.
A couple things. One, I absolutely think Collins would keep his job for 10 years if he won 3 conference championships in 10 years and a regular season conference championship.
Right.
Two, Mike Oresko is not in a position to make any demands.
No.
He's making all these promises about we're going to have this huge TV deal, and the ESPN's got no money, so there goes your entire biddy. He's talking about the next TV deal might be on Netflix, might be on Facebook. And first of all, it's Mike Oresko. He's not going to come
to exactly. Mike Oresko is not the commissioner of the SEC here. He's not a legend like on the Mount Rushmore of commissioners, if such a mount existed.
Mike Oresko could walk from the stadium to Temple, and there's a 99% chance nobody would ever recognize him.
Well, now you're just being mean.
No, like I'm just saying, like he doesn't have that persona, he doesn't have that history, he doesn't have that experience. And regardless, even if he was the commissioner of the SEC, like I don't think people get that involved, right? You're not going to go to Pat Kraft and you're going to fire this guy.
No.
You got to fire this guy who...
Again... Two-time,
coach of the year.
No.
Take him to the right.
No.
Whether or not Temple should move on from Dumphy is a completely different question, but whether or not a conference should, there's a lot of other issues. I mean, they didn't get rid of Orlando Antigua until January.
The other thing I'd like to point out here, Kraft sitting around for some reason, that implies, and fans I think misunderstand this, when you're making a move, whether it's now 2 years, 5 years down the road on your basketball coach or your football coach, the AD is not solely the one pushing the buttons here. Trustees are involved, so this is not necessarily just a Pat Kraft thing, but boy, people are really trying to shoehorn in the Fran Dumphy questions again, this time by way of an angry commissioner. Do you remember when we found out that Mike Oresko was going to be made available to us before?
Multiple times, happens every year.
Yeah, and we just continued to sit at the table and eat cheesesteaks.
The first time it happened...
I don't know if we should admit that.
The first time it happened was 2015, and Temple had just leaked that they were considering a stadium.
Yeah.
So Mike Oresko was there. I think it was him against... Who Temple played? Maybe UConn? Again, Temple beat UConn, they won the East. So that's why Oresko was there. And everyone flocked to him. Let's talk about it. Same thing, fast forward a year, it's Temple USF. Oresko's going to be available in the corner. I think we both all looked up for a second and just continued the conversation.
I mean, Mike Oresko's a nice guy. I don't want to poke fun at him too much. But no, he's not. A, it's not in his nature to do that. B, I don't think he wields enough power to do that. And C, again, I just think readers are trying to wedge questions in here to see how they can just get to this topic. Again, appreciate the questions, but no, I don't see that.
What if Mike Oresko tried to pressure you to make a move on me? I think it's time to... To let Kyle go. He's been around for long enough. It's been nine years of mediocre results.
Sit down and have some Papa John's pizza here at Navy Marine Corps Stadium.
I was fine with the Navy Marine Corps Stadium food.
I ate a spread of just ridiculously unhealthy food, and I wasn't affected by it, fortunately. And Papa John's, there was a Chick-fil-A sandwich, cold cuts.
A lot of Diet Dr. Peppers. I drank a lot of Diet Dr. Peppers. Must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
Forrest Gump references. Nice job. Next question. There's Pat Egan.
Hi.
97.5's Pat Egan checking in, a longtime fan. Yeah, starts off, hi, period. Hi, Pat. Thanks for taking my call. Dave Patnode, however it's spelled, came from a program that never tackled in practice. What's some solid...
Patty Nude.
Patty Nude, yeah. Never tackled in practice. Solid research on Pat's part. Will Collins consider adopting less tackling in practice? Also... Can Kyle explain why we don't get more four-star recruits and when Randolph get fired? Thank you. I don't think it's an interesting question. Based off of what Jeff Collins has been saying and saying, look, I know Matt Rhule. I have a genuine appreciation for how this program was built. If you're going to call yourself the minister of mayhem, I don't necessarily see him coming in and saying, oh, we're not going to be hitting as much in practice.
That was less of a Dave Patton thing and more of a Joe Moglia thing. Like, yeah. The Coastal Carolina coach down there used to be CFO of Ameritrade. Is that where he came from? Yeah, CEO of Ameritrade. He just kind of did like a new AG thing.
It's like the Mark Trestman of college football, like transitioning out of one thing.
What did Mark Trestman do before? Wasn't he in the CFL?
Yeah.
Well, so he was a lawyer and then went to go become the 49ers offensive coordinator. Then after that, I think he went up to the CFL. It was with the Montreal Alouettes, I think. Played football at the University of Minnesota with one Chris Coyer Sr., the father of former Temple quarterback Chris Coyer.
But you're missing the fact that before that, he was the quarterback's coach for the Vikings, Bucks, Browns. He did all this NFL stuff. They spent 2 years as a lawyer.
He transitioned out of the private sector and then came back into football. I knew that stuff. Maybe I didn't know all those teams, but yeah, whatever. Anyway, let's get back to Pat's question.
Anyway, when he was at Georgetown, when he was at New Haven, there's all these things they tackled. I don't see it.
I don't see.
I was gonna say, and not that any of them were bad. I was very impressed with Dave when we sat down with him.
Very impressive guy. Yeah. I think he knows offense. I think he was pretty practical, but I was impressed with him too. I mean, he seems to be getting some good reviews so far from the other staff members that you talk to. So, and I think he just took about the most straightforward approach you could take with the quarterbacks, and just saying basically like, look, we realize that Neutile and Russo are more pocket guys. If we got to roll with that, we'll roll with that. If we got to go with a guy that can run around a little bit more like Senteo or Logan Marchie, we'll...
Real quick, can we go back to UConn? I don't think there's any chance that happens, right? They go to the Big East for basketball only. By NCAA rules, they cannot stay in the American in that situation.
Right.
Because American offers basketball. You can't pick and choose that. So if they did that and they went to the Big East for basketball, they would have to go to a different conference does not offer basketball as like a football-only conference. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to go independent, or you'd have to... I guess they can go to the MAC as like a football-only. Actually, I don't even know. I guess because Big East doesn't offer football. Okay, so they could go to the MAC as like a football-only player. They're not going to go to the MAC. The MAC won't take them. They're not going to go independent.
And if I'm Randy Edsall at that point, I say, what the hell?
If I'm Randy Edsall at that point, I say, just put us out to pasture. Like, you can't take away my conference and then be like, oh, yeah, we're still going to play football. You have to drop the program at that point.
Yeah. Don't know if I see that happening. Yeah. Next question.
No, we're still on. Can Kyle explain why we don't give more four-star recruits and when will Duffy get fired? I'll say they get a four-star recruit this class. I'll call it now. I bet you they get a four-star recruit in this class. Mm-hmm. People get all wowed away from them. Probably doesn't produce
and a bunch
anything.
Of 2 and 3 stars play better.
Yeah, that's why I posted on the forum today about people were like, oh, yeah, like, are we really going up against these guys in Power 5 offers? It's okay. Four of the first 6 kids that Rhule got in the 2014 class had major Power 5 offers. Mm-hmm. Aaron Ruff had Michigan State and like Wisconsin, all this stuff. The two that didn't have Power 5 offers at the time of their commitment are your starting safeties right now. Delvon Randall. Sean Chandler got an offer from Rutgers later on, but at the time he didn't. Mm-hmm. Then you had Shamir Bearfield transferred. Connor Morehart never made it to Temple. Brennan Thrift has gotten basically strongly suggested to transfer from 2 programs now. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody, and then Aaron Ruff's the other one. And Aaron Ruff hasn't done anything yet. So we'll get some 4-star guy and some 2-star guy. We'll be on top of him in the depth chart.
Next up, a few questions from Philly Bully on Temple. Temple Al is his Twitter name.
Philly underscore Bully on Twitter.
A few questions here. Number one, do you see us splitting the UCF and UConn home games? What's your take? Number two, a lot of high majors were offered in football yesterday. Any word on level of interest? And number three, in regards to basketball, do you think we have a good chance at a regional guy like Valdir Manuel or Jake Forrester? So do you see Temple splitting? This is basketball. He's talking about the UCF and UConn home games.
No, because I think they win both.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's plausible.
Yeah. I think they'll be a favorite against UConn at home. Mm-hmm. UCF at home, too.
The Fighting Dwayne Killings.
UCF, after they... Granted, the box score looks awful because they lost by, like, 30. Once they got that initial just albatross of a first half out of the way, they played okay.
Yeah, I mean, they could definitely...
They could definitely beat UCF.
UCF is...
Penn beat UCF. Let's not forget that. Penn beat UCF.
Yeah, UCF... Lest we forget. Yeah, these are two...
You made it sound like a famous...
You know what I think they're more likely to lose? Tonight. I think they're more likely to lose at ECU.
Yeah,
they're
good at home. A good home team. This is not...
They're more likely... If they win tonight, I'm going to say 19-12.
Yeah. I mean, people don't want to hear about our predictions for a game that's tonight. But
well, maybe they do just
unless they go back to the future.
But yeah, it would not surprise me if they do lose tonight.
Yeah. 19-12. Win a game in the conference, get to 20 wins. People go, ah, don't be one there, 20 wins. They're a 7 seed in the NIT.
Yeah.
They might end up being like the sixth best team in the conference. Like they
yeah, there's a chance they get up to like 5.
Yeah, they were pick 6. They might end up being 6.
The rest of Memphis' schedule? Memphis' schedule is like the opposite Temple in that they played all the cupcakes and they're 8-5 in the conference. And they have like SMU, like UConn, like all these teams left that it's like, yeah, they could go like 9-9. Yeah,
Memphis is not that good.
No, they're not.
Mm-mm.
Dedrick Lawson just shoots it like 25 times a game. And
yeah.
His brother is not living up to the hype either. Like, KJ Lawson at first, like, oh, this is going to be like a good 1-2 punch. Now. It's like a drastic difference.
He played pretty well on Sunday.
Because he had 10 rebounds, but he didn't shoot that well, right? Yeah. Like, I don't like KJ Lawson. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Don't let him.
Probably a hell of a guy.
Probably a hell of a guy.
It was interesting how they got those two. Too.
They hired their dad as the DBO, right?
Yeah.
The old Larry Brown move, the Danny Manning move.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Temple's going to do it, too, with Rick Clemson.
Yeah, right.
So that happens.
And Jim Harbaugh's doing it right now.
Yep.
But that being said, I think the dad that they're hiring used to coach in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, he makes sense. But like, you're doing it to get the kid.
Yep. Number two.
I would just be psyched. I'd have contracts just cycling people in. Like John DiCarlo Jr. for some reason just...
You would hire my dad.
If you, for some reason, were good enough to warrant...
You would hire my dad?
I'd imagine
my father on your coaching staff.
I would also be terrible to these parents.
Kyle, I took the liberty of rewiring your office while you were out of practice.
He could be the swag coordinator.
I turned the lights like different.
No swag involved with my
father. Do you notice the
different
hue in the light bulbs? No, I don't. we spent a lot of money on that.
Kyle, Johnny hasn't said anything to me in a few days. What's he thinking? What's going on right now? Oh, boy. He's a special man. Anyway.
I disconnect his phone.
Yeah. Imagine his recruiting pitch. He would talk about my nephews, and they would just be bored instantly. Not that I don't love my nephews. I love my nephews, but my dad's a character. Number two, on high majors were offered in football yesterday. Any word on levels of interest or level of interest?
Well, they're literally offering more kids. They're offering their St. Joe Preps kid. I guess they realize, like, oh, crap, we're allowed to, like, send out offers now.
Because
now they're just, like, they're blasting these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one thing that's been interesting is I think, from what I've been told, they actually have been asking the kids to post it on Twitter, be like, hey, if we offered you, would you post it on Twitter? So I think part of it's just like a little bit of a buzz thing. I mean, I think Collins is aware of, I mean, you see Collins all over Twitter. He's very aware of creating buzz and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, I think sort of some of it's just that. But, I mean, some of it, they reaffirmed some offers to some kids.
Some of them were funny, though. Like, I was texting you, like, yeah, like Elijah McAllister.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they reaffirmed my offer. But, yeah, you have, like, dude, you got, like, Tennessee. You got, like...
Yeah, I think you have anything to worry about.
Fine.
So, I mean, I think the level of interest is, yeah, I mean, they're getting more than 120 players to come to Junior Day, which isn't bad, and a lot of guys with high major offers. So there's interest there. Again, how many of them do they get? No, I don't think them.
We also have to remember where we are in the cycle. Like, it's February.
Yeah.
It's literally almost a year until signing day.
Right.
You're going to see, like, nothing happen. They'll probably get, like, an early kid in, like, April. Like, they usually get, like, one or two in April. At least the rule staff did. And then there'll be silence again, and then they'll get, like, 12 kids in June, because that's when kids will start coming to camps, and they'll start really, like, putting the vices to some of them.
Yeah, and now it's just so early. I mean, so many schools are, you know, a school could love one kid now, and then 2 months later...
Willa Pierre was actually committed to Temple this time last year. Like, Temple wanted to take him, Willa Pierre was committed.
Where'd he end up, UCF?
FIU.
FIU. Okay. And he actually signed with them.
Well, and then as the cycle progressed, it became more and more obvious that Will and Pierre and Temple were not going to end up together.
Yeah, no, they weren't on the same page.
They were like, I don't know where I was going. Who are two people that, like, in a sitcom that don't end up together? Do Ross and Rachel end up together? I think they do.
At the end?
At the end, he goes, like, the air.
Wayne and Jerry.
Yeah, maybe Wayne and Jerry.
Can't
stop trying to will it to happen. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Willa, stop trying to Willa.
Oh my goodness. That actually was pretty good. In regards to basketball, do you think we have a good chance at a regional guy like Valdir Emanuel or Jake Forrester? Valdir Emanuel plays at the Patrick School, right?
Yeah.
Jake Forrester, legacy player.
West Town. He's blown up.
Yeah, he's
like
really, really.
He's number 70 kid in the nation.
Yeah, really, really blown up. I don't know the Temple has recruited. Have they put together three good recruiting classes? Yes. Have they put together a class that's good enough to say, like, they're automatic shoe-in for a legacy kid?
Have they ever recruited West Town well?
No. Well, to be fair, West Town, usually their recruits are either, like, 4 or 5-star kids right off the bat, or they don't, you know.
This kid ended up at Maryland.
The shooter, the wing shooter, what was his name?
Ends in, like, ENS.
Nickens?
Yes, Jared Nickens. Good call.
They ran on him.
Yeah, they ran on him, and he was favoring like Maryland, Wake Forest. He liked Wake.
Daniel Sheffu was from there, even though technically he graduated from Downtown East for some reasons.
Yeah, I wonder why. Valder Emanuel is an interesting one. They have put in some time recruiting him. Chris Clark has been recruiting him. I think John Allen, former Coates Hill product and Seton Hall player, is his guardian, I think, is involved in his life somehow. I mean, they're both guys that you would want to recruit, both in intriguing names. And they also like, from that class, they also like Bryce Golden at the St. James School down in Maryland, where Obi Natsionia played. So, I mean, I would say there would be three other their top targets at that position. As for a good chance...
I don't think they have a chance at Forrester.
No. Good chance of Valder Emanuel? Yeah, sure. What kind of chance?
Here's the question. Is how many scholarships are they going to have next year? It's like to actually bring in for the 2018 class. We obviously don't know what's going to happen with like Isaiah silent. Lewis, Ian Carvalho, Trey Lowe. As of right now, this is with Josh Brown coming back, they would have...
If you're talking about 2018...
Yeah, so Josh Brown doesn't matter.
No, Josh Brown doesn't matter, so...
Two spots. As of right now, with Isaiah Lewis on scholarship and Ian Carvalho and Trey Lowe, you have two spots.
I think it's still another...
Well, Isaiah Lewis wouldn't matter either, right?
Yeah. Also a good point. So two, unless Carvalho leaves.
Yeah, so it's another wing and a big, right, probably?
Yeah. But that guy, when was the last time you saw a Temple class where they only had two scholarships to offer?
Not too long ago, right? With Will...
Will, they had like three spots, and they only brought in him, and they...
I want to say...
I feel like they usually always have four, and they bring in three kids.
The year that they brought in Obi, they had three available, and they just brought him in.
Just brought one, yeah.
As for two? Yeah, maybe that's been a while.
It's been a little while.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Do they have a chance? Sure, good chance. I don't know if I would say good chance just yet. Next question, Mike TB31 on the message boards. You guys discussed Junior Day a little bit. Why is it held on a Monday? LOL, don't kids have school?
It's what President's
entails
Day.
President's Day. So, yeah.
The only reason I know this is because any, like... Because
you looked at the calendar.
No, because I don't work for a university. I don't get Monday off.
Nor do I.
Okay, but my wife gets, like, anytime there's something written on the calendar, she gets, like, that day off.
Yeah, All Saints Day.
Pretty much. Like, she gets, like, I get, like, 8, I think, like, Christmases and stuff like that. She probably gets, like, 7 because...
Victory over Japan Day.
I don't want to ask about it. Man,
what's your Columbus Day policy? No, we work. Really? Guy discovered the new world? Man, a great movie. Have you seen You, Me, and Dupree, Matt?
Yeah, I have.
You like it? What a disappointing reaction.
It's all right. Not my favorite movie. Not my favorite Owen Wilson movie.
So it's heavily quoted.
But yeah, I know you're a fan.
Yeah, Kyle likes it too. What it entails, how much Coach Collins will be able to interact with top targets, any history on prominent players that attended Temple Junior Day in the past that we signed, etc. Thanks. Well, yeah, we talked about this a little bit already. Again, more than 100, 120 guys coming in, a lot of top names. Again, it's being held on a Monday because it is President's Day, so they do have off from school. Yeah, what it entails is just basically a recruiting event where they'll have the guys down at the link, they'll have them back up to campus. How much will Jeff Collins be able to interact with top targets?
He's
a lot.
He can do whatever he wants with them.
Yeah.
They can talk, it's not like, they have to talk about the weather. They can talk about this is how we would use in the offense. This is how we do this.
And what they usually do at a lot of these events is, like, you know, the guys are around, and then before they leave, you know, hey, coach wants to see you. Now, again, a lot of these guys have offers already, but players that were at junior days in the past that Temple signed, a lot.
Probably assume that almost every, like, regional recruit made it to
at some point. Was it a junior day?
Because junior day doesn't even necessarily... Like, they're bringing in kids from 2020. They're bringing in kids from 2019. Like, it's not just juniors.
Right, right.
Recall Armstead was... I remember him being at a junior day, and that was, like, the first time I had heard of him.
Yeah.
He came for a junior day, and, you know, obviously Rob Ennis at the time was kind of the big name out of Millville. And, you know, you hear about this kid who's playing fullback and all over the safety and all over the place and the backup running back at Millville. And he ends up, you know, obviously.
Right. Yeah.
He ends up turning down an ACC offer to come to Temple.
Yeah. So there have been a lot of guys. So, again, I think it'll be interesting to see. You know, we'll try to talk to some of those recruits after that junior day to see what their thoughts were. Next question, Scott Trail 25, a loyal Scoop listener and mailbag contributor. We appreciate that. Can each of you give your top three Temple football players who were the most impactful in carrying this program from the dark ages into the light, from Golden's first year to present, and who was your one runner-up? That's a great question.
Very good question. You want to start?
I mean, it's top three players who were the most impactful? I mean, you'd have to say, I didn't always stay healthy, but I mean, Bernard Pierce has to be in that group, I think. I mean, it was a really, really dynamic running back. I mean, things really started taking off when he was able to just literally just run the ball down people's throats and they started winning games, you know, starting with that big breakout performance he had against Buffalo. I would have to put, I mean, you got to put maybe Adam DeMichael in that group.
We're 2-for-2 right now, so it's going to upset me if you...
Number three... Okay. I mean, how do you not go with Muhammad Wilkerson, I guess,
right? Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess.
Or Adrian Robinson. There's a lot of guys.
I was going to do Adrian Robinson, because even though he didn't make it as much of an impact in the NFL, he was the first guy they really went in. They, like, went up against some, like, ACC level.
Yeah, they beat Pitt,
They beat Pitt.
Yeah.
They beat... Somebody, I mean, it might have just been Pitt, but they went toe-to-toe with, like, a bigger program and, like, got an impact player. So I was going to go DeMichael, Robinson, and Pierce... I guess just to add something different, maybe somebody like a Jaquan Jarrett who came in, like, literally they didn't take him until, like, June, July that year. Like, or Tahir Whitehead had nobody. Mm-hmm. And it really showed, like, okay, we're going to trust the tape on this one, we're going to coach him up, and we're going to make him Tahir Whitehead.
Yeah, Tahir Whitehead would be my runner-up. There were so many guys. There were so many guys that were really, really impactful.
Well, I mean, one that comes to mind, I mean, just to be different, I guess, Matt Brown, I think he deserves some consideration.
Sure.
I mean, with all the injuries that Bernard Pierce dealt with, without Matt Brown as the backup, I don't know.
Temple went, like, outside of Denaro Sharps, Temple went, like, 15 years without, like, anything resembling a running back. And all of a sudden, Bernard Pierce goes down. Oh, crap, we got another one. You got just as good of one. Just as good one that just happens to be a foot shorter.
It's Tahir Whitehead. I mean, I think Phil Walker should be in that mix. I mean, with the amount of games they won with him at quarterback, he should be in there probably.
Even some guys from that other early class, like Andre Neblett, Steve Maneri was huge.
Sanford,
who snuck into the NFL, who wasn't even really considered to be like a high, like, you know, NFL prospect.
That first year, I think Rule said this, that first year the defensive line had five NFL guys.
Yeah, which is amazing.
Sanford was a backup.
Because they had nothing to recruit on. Yeah. Nothing. Absolutely nothing to recruit on.
It's got like Steve, it could be a Steve Maneri, too. Like,
There's
the name goes on. Like, you look back at some of these guys, and you almost like almost become afterthoughts. But some of their stories are insane.
Absolutely, yeah, I like that question a lot. Next one, Fig One from the message board. What is your best guess on the starting O line and D line?
Let's do offensive line first. Give me your offensive line.
So I go Matt Hennessy at center. I go Leon Johnson at left tackle. Jalen Robinson at right tackle. Jovan Fair at left guard, and I'm going to pencil in Trey Clark at right guard.
I'll go Hennessy center. I'll go Leon Johnson left tackle. I'll go Trey Clark left guard. Jovan Fair right guard. Who am I missing?
Right? Oh, yeah. You probably want to put Clark on the left side.
Who am I missing? Right tackle? Right side, right tackle? And I'll say Jalen Robinson right tackle.
I guess, I think I'd agree with Kyle there.
That's the second time today that he's agreed with Kyle.
I mean, maybe Adrian Sullivan would be in the mix for that guard spot.
He played Brian pretty Carter well last year.
Brian Carter will also be in that mix. But, I mean, I'd say right now Jovan Fair would have that edge. Mm-hmm. And then if they don't end up with Trey Clark, Sullivan or Carter would probably be one of
the offensive line we're just, like, forgetting about from, like, last year's freshman class? Hennessy played. Gordon Thomas is a walk-on. Benson Israel might be in the mix a little bit for center.
Maybe Benson Israel.
Cozy, even though they gave him a scholarship, he probably needs to put a lot more weight.
Although, Chris Wiesenhan at the National Signing Day event, he was like, he's going to be an impact player for us very soon.
He got sick, though, during the fall, right, and lost a lot of weight, I think.
Yeah.
So.
But he did, went out of his way to say that.
Yeah. Other than that, that's not really anybody we're missing, unless like a James McHale or an Aaron Rowe.
Yeah, or you know, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think he'll be in
Cole
a position
Boozer's
to start.
Cole Boozer's a redshirt senior.
Well, I'd like to see what they get this spring, even just in terms of meaningful snaps out of a guy like Darian Bryant. When do we start seeing a little bit of him? Maybe not as a starter, but...
Yeah, well, he came in with a lot of work to do, even though he was a mid-year in
Roy.
I mean, he was like almost 350 pounds when he came in.
Yeah. Defensive line.
These are kind of like a weird question because they're going to rotate eight guys in there, right? But I guess I would say Jacob Martin, Freddie Booth Lloyd, Michael Dogby, and who the hell am I missing at the other defensive
line? Well, Karamo, but do you put him...
Karamo's going to play a lot of spots on that line. Like, he's going to slide in. Tarif Finch, I don't think, is a full-time player, really, at this point. I think
they'll probably consider him a star. The coaches keep bringing his name up, and you know, saying like, and here's a guy who's had multiple issues with his knee and is a great kid and a really good athlete, just hasn't been able to stay healthy, but they keep talking about him like an impact player. So I think maybe I'd go with, again, as Kyle said, they definitely are going to rotate guys. I'm thinking Jacob Martin and Sharif Finch at the ends.
Also, got to throw Greg Webb in the middle.
Yeah, Dogby, and it's, again, it depends on what kind of look they want to start with. Do you want more versatile, like, inside guys that can kind of, you know, rush the passer? Or do they want to, you know, I'd say Dogby's, I'd say maybe Martin and Finch, the defensive end positions, Dogby, and then maybe that other spot, is it Okromo, is it Greg Webb?
I think Dan Archibon could be in that mix of defensive tackle, too. I mean, his name came up a lot last year. They ended up redshirting him, but, I mean, he played in...
He played in the Charlotte game. He played in the Charlotte game, and Kenny Yeboah played
in the Charlotte game. Made it the trip up to Penn State, and they held him out. But, yeah, I think they were on the verge of maybe blowing his redshirt last year and just letting him play the season. So I think he's certainly a guy that could...
Curious. I mean, we're talking about some beefy guys. I'm kind of curious where, like, that speed edge rusher comes from. Is that something where, like, a Dana Levine can fit in? Like, Chris Tucker, maybe? Like
Quincy Roche.
Maybe that's a situation where Malik Burns can get in a little bit, like, there. Or maybe with new defense, it's going to be dealing with more, like, linebacker blitz. Like, we don't know. Because you're going to have a lot of speed at linebacker. And you're going to have what looks like a pretty beefy defensive line so far. Mm-hmm.
Final question comes from one of our favorites on Twitter, James Rutfield at JRU Sirius. So he submitted his question as a photo, similar to what recruits do when they decide on a game. This is our second Margot Robbie reference on the Scoop.
Which is like 10-2 for you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, what can we say there?
We have like a dedicated segment.
Right. What if she were a guest? See, would any of us be able to formulate words? Maybe.
I'd have to be on the other side of the door.
Yes. Who's the guy panning outside? That's Kyle.
He's fogging up the window.
Yeah. So the question is, along those lines, would you rather spend the night with Margot Robbie and have nobody believe you when you told them, or not spend the night with Margot Robbie and have everyone think you did? This is very easy for me.
Are you going with the former? The first one?
Yeah, you spend the night with Margot Robbie and have nobody believe you. It's more about the experience.
So let me throw this out here, though.
I'll do apologies to our wives.
What if it's a bad experience? Like, what if you're just not in peak position? It's a bad performance. The second one, the latter position, sets you up for the future with non-Margot Robbies. Oh, that guy was with Margot Robbie. That made People magazine. John DeCarlo was Margot Robbie. All this sets you up, puts you in the game for other people that... Quite frankly,
the deck underneath that headline. Who the hell is John DeCarlo?
Exactly, though. Yeah. It gets people talking about you. You're getting out there. You're getting not necessarily the 10, but the 8, the 9. I'll go with the latter. It's a long turn. It's a long con. You gotta think up here. You gotta think.
Although I've taken Kyle's side a couple times today, I gotta side with John here.
Now, you two will have your 6 minutes of fun. I will have a lifetime of. What's Kyle getting into this week? Oh, you remember that girl, that extra from Shameless? Guess what? Kyle's hanging out with her this weekend. It turns out she read People magazine and saw that Margot Robbie was interesting.
The extra from Shameless.
Yeah, I'm not trying to claim it's going to be like Emmy Rossum knocking down my door, but it'll be like, you know, that aspiring
actress. Emmy Rossum's not an extra from Shameless. She's the star of Shameless.
Listen to what I'm saying.
I know.
It's going to be the aspiring actress who needs a little bit of fame injected. It's going to be like the girl that Instagrammed that she was sleeping with Joel Embiid. Like, oh,
and
this
then
is
you
my
say
Valentine.
Fake news.
Fake news. But then afterwards he admitted, like, yeah, I hooked up with that girl. I just don't do it anymore. Like, well, clearly you hooked up with that girl. That's a photo of you post-hooking up with that girl.
Yeah, unless it's
so
a good
she's
Photoshop
famous on her
job.
Own, apparently. I've never seen it. Wags. She's on a show called Wags.
Oh, God. That show's awful.
I've never seen it. Wife and Girlfriends.
Wife and Girlfriends, yeah.
Has Margot Robbie been in anything recently?
Suicide Squad.
I didn't see that either.
But she was in Suicide Squad, which I didn't hear was that great. She was in Wolf of Wall Street, obviously. She was in My Dreams.
She was in this. I focused that Will Smith movie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So she was in two Will Smith movie things. He was in Suicide Squad.
Oh, okay.
Other than that, she has been in... Well, that's probably not
I like how we're ending the scoop. With
that's
Smart
not a
rock and roll.
Yeah.
She's in Peter Rabbit? What the hell?
Peter Rabbit. She has the Australian accent, too.
She does. The Legend of Tarzan, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which was that movie
with Steve Carell and Tina Fey, right?
With Steve Carell in it?
Yeah.
And Tina Fey goes to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Focus. The Big Short. She's in The Big Short at one point. They're telling the story about The Big Short, and And they just stop and they go, I know a lot of this might be confusing to you. Here's Margot Robbie in a bathtub explaining it to you. It's just her in a bathtub, like breaking it down into simple terms, to layman's terms.
Well, James, appreciate the question and another Margot Robbie reference. Kyle elects to pass up on Margot Robbie.
Can't phrase it like that.
Yeah, you did. That's exactly what I'm saying.
But you can't phrase it.
See, you're like, this is like the bird in hand is better than, you know, than two in the bush. So you're passing up on just a gorgeous woman, one of the most beautiful people on this planet, and just on the premise that it's going to get you greater gains in the future.
And isn't that going to drive you a little crazy, though, knowing that you hooked up with Margot Robbie and you want to go home, you want to tell Kyle that you hooked up with Margot Robbie, and I just don't believe you? Like, no matter how hard you try to convince
me, don't believe. You're very skeptical.
But, like, if
person.
You came to me and said, like, I know this sounds crazy, but I was at Adobe, and I look across. I just finished a CD special. I'm waiting for my duck quesadilla to come out, and I look across, and oh my god, it's Margot Robbie. We just hit it off, and I don't know.
She's like, they have a great jukebox.
I went home with her. Like, I didn't even go back to my home. She was staying at the blah blah. I went over there. Can't tell you which hotel it is. There's two trees involved. She goes over.
Reference.
Take it back to the double tree. This happens. I would think you were like certifiable. I'd go like, John, that did not happen. You weren't there, and no matter how much you say, nobody will ever believe you. But everybody thinks. I walk down the street, people go, that guy betted Margot Robbie.
Yeah, but what memories do you have? You have no memories.
I have none, because in this scenario, I didn't hook up with her.
Right. Exactly.
But I can use that. I can parlay it into a loving relationship with my wife.
Single John DeCarlo would have been very happy to be with Margot Robbie and say, like, well, I'm out.
The look John is giving Kyle,
you
right
know
now,
this.
It's just great.
Scrutinizing dating relationships.
So season 2, episode 22 of The Scoop is coming to a wrap. By all means, continue to send us your questions, tweets, DMs, photos of Margot Robbie. And we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening, everybody.